You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Erin Wager-Miller. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, January 7th, 2019.
There are so many really dedicated readers of poetry and writers of poetry and supporters of the art. I think this is the best time, and certainly the best time I can remember, for poetry.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glad speaks with Indiana Poet Laureate Adrian Matika in an anniversary episode of Big Talk. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glad.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Jim Shelton talks about his work with Monroe County CASA, court-appointed special advocates, as the state continues to grapple with the need for child advocates in the wake of the ongoing national opioid epidemic. That's coming up on Activate, our weekly segment, spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
The federal government shutdown is entering its third week. The dispute over federal funding for President Donald Trump's border wall has furloughed hundreds of thousands of federal employees. An estimated 320,000 federal employees across various agencies are on leave from work without pay. In Indiana, that includes members of the U.S. Forest Service.
Hello. You have reached the Hoosier National Forest. The office is closed at this time. We are on furlough due to lapse in government funding. Please leave a voicemail so that we can return your call when we get funding restored. Thank you.
The Hoosier National Forest is maintained by the U.S. Forest Service, who, as you've just heard on their answering machine, have been furloughed by the government shutdown. The Hoosier National Forest, which spans over 200,000 acres across southern Indiana's rolling hills, is one of a handful of protected areas in the state which are administered by federal employees. Currently, there is no sign of a federal budget being passed in the near future. On Friday, President Trump announced that the shutdown could last months or even years. That poses a problem for the Hoosier National Forest, according to Indiana Forest Alliance Conservation Director Dr. Ray Schnapp.
I think the forest can manage itself at least for a while, certainly, but there are questions about whether there might be such a thing as timber rustling during this time when nobody's paying attention. Illegal timber harvest, in other words. Somebody needs to be paying attention, and probably neighbors would be the first to notice. So I would say, like, it would be a good idea for neighbors to be especially vigilant. There aren't that many neighbors in the state forest territory, but there certainly are some people with inholdings and, you know, land adjacent to the public land.
Beyond stopping illegal logging in the forest, Dr. Schnapp says the Forest Service is also in charge of managing the Hoosier National Forest. She says that can mean a couple of different things.
Management for control of invasive species seems pretty important because once they get established, it's really hard to get rid of them. But they sometimes use management as a euphemism for timber harvest, and those are not really necessary in any sense. I think the forest is okay on that score, but there are lots of questions, again, about people who might take advantage of the opportunity, thinking that no one's looking, that they could go in and harvest timber for themselves, or other sorts of nefarious activities that might take place.
The government shutdown comes after the Forest Service announced in November that they're considering logging some 4,000 acres of the Hoosier National Forest. Environmental watchdogs like the Indiana Forest Alliance and Friends of Lake Monroe have balked at the proposal, which is being called a form of forest management. Part of that proposal includes the clear cutting of over 400 acres south of Lake Monroe in an area in an area called Houston South. Dr. Schnapp echoed concerns by the Indiana Forest Alliance and Friends of Lake Monroe about the potential impact of clear cutting within Lake Monroe watershed.
Well, the Lake Monroe watershed is the water supply for many people in southern Indiana, but also the Lake Monroe is a recreational water body, very popular for recreational use, and this watershed is particularly vulnerable to soil erosion. So when they clear cut and denude the slopes, then there is greatly increased opportunity for soil erosion to occur. And especially in areas where you have highly erodible soils that are known to be impacted.
Lake Monroe is Indiana's largest reservoir. U.S. Forest Service proposals to log thousands of acres in the Hoosier National Forest have been put on hold, at least until the agency receives its federal budget allocation and resumes normal operations.
Indiana Republicans supported their party with record-setting contributions in 2018. The Indiana Republican Party reports collecting $930,000 in contributions. According to a press release from the Indiana Republican State Committee, that's $100,000 over 2017 funding totals. The campaign of Governor Eric Holcomb and Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch also claimed strong end-of-the-year fundraising totals. The governor's campaign, Eric Holcomb for Indiana, reportedly ended 2018 with $4 million in the bank. The Republican Party says that's more cash on hand than any previous second-term governor. Lieutenant Governor Crouch's campaign, Friends of Suzanne Crouch, reportedly closed the year $65,000 above projections. Combine Holcomb and Crouch's fundraising totals with that of the Indiana Republican Party, and the state GOP garnered a record-setting $5.7 million in financial support last year.
Catalent Pharma Solutions in Bloomington is expecting a $100 million expansion. The international biologics firm based in New Jersey made the announcement today. Catalent bought out locally owned Cook Pharma in October of 2017. The company announced today the expansion at its facilities in Bloomington should be completed by 2021. The announcement includes an estimated $14 million in expansion to Catalent's packaging facilities. The drug manufacturer, which also maintains a facility in Madison, Wisconsin, employs an estimated 900 people in operation in Bloomington.
The Monroe County School Corporation is reporting higher than average graduation rates for 2018. According to the Indiana Department of Education, just 80% of the state's high school students graduated over the last school year. MCCSC reports its 2018 graduation rate at 95% across four high schools. Richland Bean Blossom Community Schools reports a higher graduation rate, with almost 92% of students at Edgewood High graduating last year. Both school corporations graduated more students in 2018 than 2017. The Indiana Department of Education is also reporting a waiver graduation rate of just over 87%. The waiver graduation rate is the percentage of students who did not pass course assessments and therefore received waivers to get their diploma. Indiana also has a different federal graduation rate for 2018. The Indiana Department of Education states that due to differences in state and federal accountability standards, Indiana's federal non-waiver graduation rate for 2018 was 79.9%, about 1% point lower than its state rate. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Benedict Jones. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington. WFHB's interview program, Big Talk with host Michael Glab, celebrated its one-year anniversary last week. Last year, Big Talk's first interview was with Indiana Poet Laureate Adrian Matika. In January of 2018, he was just beginning his two-year term as the state's Poet Laureate. Matika continues to travel to the four corners of the state years later, encouraging a love of poetry among Hoosiers.
Now, Rodney Jones has described you. It's very interesting. He, too, is a noted poet.
Yes.
I'm going to read this. I bet I'm going to turn your face red. Adrian Matika plays the language like a horn, with a cool inventiveness and bravura phrasing. Yet his poems are as notable for their humanity as their flourishes and riffs at the borders of expression. His singular gift is to write outside the usual habits of communication and to deliver again and again the inside story, the testament of a life. He said that about you.
You know, he is such a generous human being. Rodney and I... let me just say this. First of all, that is embarrassing, but in the good way.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm grateful for his words. But the last year I was in graduate school, I only took two classes, and they were both independent studies with Rodney. So he gave me some books to read. We go play pool and talk about poetry. And I learned more playing pool and talking to Rodney about poetry than I probably ever have in any other instance.
Now, there was a poet by the name of Yusuf Komunyakaa.
Yes.
He's been a big influence on your stuff.
Absolutely. And we keep coming back to this. I know we were talking about this before we began, but the range and reach of the Indiana University MFA program is extraordinary. And Yusuf was a professor back in the 90s, in the early 90s. And so I never got to study with him here. I met him while he was here. And I didn't get to study with him until...
Well, you heard him read. And here's a quote from you about him. When I heard him read, I knew I wanted to write poems.
Yeah, I wanted to do what... I didn't even know what a poem was yet, but I wanted to do what he was doing.
No kidding.
Yeah, I had... So it must have been when I was 19. I'd never... I mean, I think maybe I'd read Shakespeare's sonnets. I think I might have read some Langston Hughes at some point. But I didn't really know anything about poetry. I never thought to write or thought to read poetry until I came to Bloomington.
What about his work got under your skin?
Oh, it's just, it sounds like the distillation of music into words. He's an incredible, I think he's the greatest living poet we have. I just think he's immaculate. And for anyone who is listening and does not know Yusuf's work, you can check out Neon Vernacular, which was his selected poems back in 1995.
I'm going to repeat that. Neon Vernacular.
Neon Vernacular.
All right.
He's also got a collected poems. He has this gorgeous book called Dinkai Dao. It's about the Vietnam War. Where he was in Vietnam, and it's incredible. But Yusuf is a writer of great range and also great musical sensibility, and that's more than anything. I think what I valued in poetry early on was the sound of it. It didn't even matter to me if I understood it, as long as it sounded good. I felt like I was leaving with some kind of an experience. I think Yusuf. I wish I had a recording of him so we could play it. He is a it sounds like he's singing.
Wow.
And it's just, it's one of the, there are a few poets. I mean, Ross, I think, is a really beautiful reader,
yeah.
As is in Kathy Bowman, too. We're lucky to be blessed that way. And Stacy they're all really difficult to follow. And I think that, Yusuf is in that category that nobody wants to follow Yusuf,
yeah.
Along with Patricia Smith. Another really brilliant reader, and Tyemba Jess. There are a few writers who just are so stunning in their oration that nobody else wants to read after them. It's sort of the end of the show, no matter when they read.
Here's a poet who's a showstopper. I'm going to read a tweet from your Twitter account. Everyone should read Emily Dickinson because A, she is a poetry boss, and B, she saw our era of bluster mistaken as wisdom 150 years in advance. Now, you quote her. Why don't you read that quote? Do you see it right down there?
Yeah. There are those who are shallow intentionally and only profound by accident. And that was actually a quote from one of her poems written on the back of an envelope.
And what I found fascinating is that one commenter then commented, a poetry boss, How repulsive. Are there rivalries within the poetry community?
Well, you know, I think there probably are, but that sounds a little bit more like someone who's culturally inexact, because the way that poetry boss is being, calling somebody a boss is saying that they're awesome.
Not meaning, you know, the authority.
Exactly.
You know, on a hierarchical scale.
Right. Even though she's that too. Yeah. But no, in that context, we're talking about how amazing Emily Dickinson is. The same way you call Kendrick Lamar a boss or Beyonce a boss.
Right.
Emily Dickinson is a boss, not the boss from Office Space.
Right, right, so, absolutely.
But back to your question, I think there are, but I think most of them are mainly benign. You know, poets disagreeing over aesthetics, poets disagreeing on who's the best, that kind of thing.
What kind of criteria could there be?
There's no other criteria except for what we value. Right? I mean, there are poets, there are young readers of poetry right now who believe that Rupi Kapoor is the best poet in the world.
Yeah, milk and honey.
Yeah, and there aren't probably more than a handful of poets who write in the tradition of Emily Dickinson or Walt Whitman who would agree with that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. The fact that they care and the fact that they receive her work in such a profound way means to me that it's a good thing.
Are there poetry critics?
There are, and most of that critical work gets farmed out to poets. There
other poets.
Yeah, other
so
poets.
So then you're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place then. Do I want to insult Adrian Matika? I don't like this collection of poetry. This stinks.
Yeah.
Should I say that? He's a great guy. That's the thing that you have to grapple with.
Yeah, and you know, I very rarely write criticism of poetry, and one of my reasons is that there is so little attention paid to poetry as it is on a large scale, and so if I have something to write positively, then I will do that. But if I don't like it, then I'm not going to spend my time writing things about the book. So whoever's book is in front of me and I don't appreciate it, I'm not going to spend time writing about it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so little time and so little space given to these things. I would rather spend my time and use that space to say something affirming.
Right. And let's repeat again. I believe you mentioned this earlier. 6% of the American public reads poetry.
6%. Yeah.
Which surprises me. I wouldn't have thought it was that high.
You know, it sounds high, doesn't it? But
yeah.
This is also 6% of the 43% of people who read.
Uh-huh. So, and the readers is less than 50% at this point.
Yeah, it's like 43% or
and
something.
And you got this info from?
From the NEA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They did a study on reading habits. I'm almost positive it was last year, but it might have been 2015.
Yeah.
And it was really disheartening. But then, you know, there's the study, there's the work that the NEA did that, you know, many organizations have tried to track the habits of readers. But then there's kind of my experience being in the world as a writer and as a teacher. And it seems to me that there are so many people reading poems, not as many as I would like, only because there are so many poems that deserve audiences.
Uh-huh.
But there are so many really dedicated readers of poetry and writers of poetry and supporters of the art. I think this is the best time, and certainly the best time I can remember, for poetry.
That was Adrian Matika speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glad. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment, spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, I'm Jim Shelton. I'm a volunteer with CASA, which stands for Court Appointed Special Advocates, and I'm also a board member. CASA's mission is to advocate for children who are in the court system because their parents have either abused or neglected them. The need is really dire right now. We have almost 100 children who are waiting for a CASA. They're in the court system. The system's determined they are in need of services, but we don't have enough CASAs to give them. Our whole juvenile judicial system is under stress because of the opioid explosion around the country. So we don't have near enough CASAs, near enough foster homes. The Department of Child Services has had to go from 24 to 41 employees here in Monroe County. And there's just a real need for people to step forward and volunteer and to help with these children to go through the court system so they don't fall through the cracks, so they're in the system as short an amount of time as is possible, and to make sure they end up with good decisions being made about what services they need and what needs to be done for them. The judge, Judge Galvin, is our juvenile court judge, and he's wonderful. And he makes it clear how much he depends on the CASA involved in the case to tell him what's going on with the children, with their parents, with the foster situation, if that's where the children are, and what services they need. The commitment is from 15 to 20 hours a month. They ask a person volunteering to be a CASA to commit for 2 years because it typically will take somewhere over a year for a case to be resolved. So they like to try to avoid turnover as much as possible. One of the strong points of a CASA is we typically don't turn over, and DCS is turning over, we hear, 30%. But I've been on cases where there have been five different DCS people involved in the course of 3 years. You sort of know that there are problems with children, that children do up in the court, end up in the court system, but until you volunteer and get involved, you have no idea how bad things are, how many children there are, how badly they may be treated, or quite often, because of the opioid explosion, they're just being not taken care of. They're just being ignored. Their parents are asleep on the couch all day. They don't get to school, or they get to school late. It's been a real revelation as to how bad things are. On the other hand, it's very gratifying when you are able to work with the parents, and a lot of times the parents really, well, probably almost all the time the parents really care, but an awful lot of time they can really get it together and work on their addiction. And it's really wonderful to see the kids either end up back with them and you feel they're going to be safe, or to see the system recognize they are not going to be able to get their act together and to move on then toward adoption, so the children end up in a good, safe, happy place. Kids are really resilient. It's amazing. You really don't save the world. You don't make everything wonderful, but you can see you've made things better. But I just hope people would think about it. I mean, the kids really, really need a CASA if they're in the court system. Thanks for listening. Again, I'm Jim Shelton, and I'm here on behalf of the Court Appointed Special Advocates, or CASAs. Thank you.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with ways that you can get trained to offer your volunteer time within the justice system. CASA is seeking a long-term relationship of at least 2 years with community members aged 21 and older who care about children, are interested in learning about family dynamics, the juvenile court system, and how to write reports for the judiciary. View upcoming training dates online. The Community Justice and Mediation Center offers a 48-hour training program for those interested in learning about conflict resolution, mediation, and restorative justice. At the end of this course, you will be qualified to be a volunteer mediator with CJAM. And the Protective Order Assistance Partnership is seeking a committed community volunteer to serve as a protective order assistant to provide help to victims of sexual violence, domestic violence, and stalking who are seeking orders of protection from the Monroe County Circuit Court. A minimum 6-month commitment is required and training is provided. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is executive producer Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. That's coming up next, right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.